The cafe on the corner of 7th and Maple was an old structure with ivy climbing up its bricks and a chalkboard menu that changed daily. It was a kind of place where time broke, where scholars brought their books, artists their sketch pads, and romanticists their scrapbooks. Every morning, at exactly 8:30, Mira Roy would claim the window seat, order a cappuccino with almond milk, and write in her leather-bound journal. She no way looked around, no way met anyone's aspect, and always left by 9:15. Across the road, in the glass-faced design plant, Arv Malhotra worked on arrangements with a kind of quiet passion. He was sent the type to notice non-natives. His world was shapes, lines, and structures. But one stormy Monday, his aspect drifted from the CAD examiner and landed across the road. The fog window of the cafe framed a woman with long black hair, hunkered over a journal. She looked up compactly. Her eyes acting to cinch onto his, however, they were separated by distance, glass, and silence. Commodity about the moment unsettled him. The coming day, he looked again. She was there. So was he. Day after day, without swapping a word, their routines collided. It was odd. It was accidental. It was still exhilarating. Mira didn't know why she began to notice him. He always wore dark button, ups, sleeves rolled neatly, face half, obscured by the hangouts. But every morning, when she lifted her eyes from her journal, he'd be there, sketching, lowering, belting his coffee. They had no way spoken. But each morning felt like a durability of a strange dialogue they were quietly having. One morning, a gust of wind knocked the chalkboard outside the cafe. Mira jumped slightly. When she turned her face toward the window, Arv was ent there. He didn't come the coming day, moreover. She tried not to suppose about it. She wrote a lyric in her journal about fading murk and silent absences, but her heart dragged unreasonably. How could you miss someone whose name you didn't indeed know? 3 days latterly, he returned, walking across the road, wet from the rain, with a laptop bag slung over one shoulder. But rather going to his plant, he pushed open the door of the cafe. The little bell chimed. Myra's pen set. He scrutinized the room, his eyes landing on her, uncertain but determined. "Is this seat taken?" he asked, voice calm but tense. Mira blinked. "No." He sat down. "I'm Arv," he said. "I work across the road." "I know," she said, surprised at herself. He smiled a little awkwardly. "I've seen you every morning." "So have I," she admitted. A beat passed. Outdoors, the rain painted stripes down the window. "It felt strange not seeing you this week," she said, her voice lower. "I had to go to Delhi for a customer meeting," he explained. "But the whole time, I kept wondering if you'd be there, at your spot." Their words were soft, nearly like admissions. It felt surreal, sitting face to face after weeks of distant familiarity. "What do you write?" he asked, C-signed to the journal. "Everything I see and say," she replied. "Studies. Letters. Stories. Occasionally runes." "Are they about non-natives across the road?" "Perhaps one or two," she teased, a small smile forming. They laughed, smoothly, like they'd done it ahead. The discussion stretched gently, like an old mass pulled between two people on a cold morning. They talked about favorite books, trip dreams, what made a space feel like home. Arv told her how he loved designing libraries and homes that breathed. Mira told him about her dream of publishing a bio called 100 Mugs of Coffee, a collection of cafe recollections. When he left, he asked, "Same time you're after?" She jounced. The coming morning, their seat was staying, and so were they. Days turned to weeks. They no way called a date, but the cafe came their ritual. They met each morning with no pledges, no histories, just the magic of the present. It was like pressing pause on reality, a sanctuary between routine and surprise. Mira started writing lower and talking further. Arv smiled more frequently, the crinkle between his brows softening. One day, she brought him a lyric. "I wrote this after our first discussion," she said, "but I didn't know if I should show it." He read it in silence. The last lines read across the road, "I set up a glass, not a face, but a meter and quiet fire, and when I saw him easily, I saw myself." He looked up, his eyes gentler than words. "I didn't know runes could feel like hands being held," he said. She flushed. It was the first time he'd touched her, not physically, but with commodity deeper. Still, neither asked for figures. Neither talked about life outside the cafe. There was an implied rule this space was untouched by the real world. But real life has a way of demanding attention. One morning, Mira arrived looking paler, eyes rimmed with fatigue. "You okay?" Arif asked. "I got a job offer. In Mumbai. A publishing house," she said. His lips parted. "That's big. I leave coming week. If I take it." A silence fell between them. "You should," he eventually said. "I don't know." "Why?" She looked out the window. "Because part of me wants to stay. Then, with this." "This," he echoed. "This thing we have, I do and indeed know what it is," she rumored. He reached across the table, fritters brushing hers. "Neither do I, but I don't want to end." Mira didn't sleep that night. She lay in bed, gaping at the ceiling, Arif's words echoing in her mind. "I don't want to end." But was "ent" that exactly what this had always been? A quiet, beautiful morning with no pledge of durability? They had drawn boundaries from the launch. No phone calls, no meetings outside the cafe, no demands. Just two people participating a corner of the world each morning, one cappuccino and discussion at a time. And yet, then they were teetering on the edge of commodity more. By the time the sun rose, Mira had made her decision. She'd meet him at the cafe one last time. But when she arrived, he was "ent" there. The bell above the door tingled as she entered, her heart sinking slightly. Her usual table was empty. She sat anyway, ordered a cappuccino, and goggled out the window. Perhaps he'd change his mind. Perhaps the silence was easier. Just as she was about to leave, the door opened. Arif rushed by, hair damp, shirt slightly wrinkled, holding a small wrapped tablet. "I allowed you to come," she said, standing. "I was writing," he said breathlessly. "I didn't want you to leave without this." He handed her the tablet. It was simple, soft black cover, bound with a leather string. Her name was scribbled on the first runner in his sharp handwriting. "I started writing about you the day we met," he said. She opened it sluggishly. Inside were sketches, notes, fractions of runes, and little descriptions, her gestures, her hoarse laugh. The effect, she had said. It was like reading a glass of her soul reflected through his eyes. "I didn't know how to say it, Mira, but you're in everything I do now." She goggled at him, stupefied. "I no way believed in love at first sight," she rumored. "Neither did I, until I saw you and kept seeing you, over and over again." A long silence followed. Also, she said, "I say ain't leave like this." "You should ain't leave at each," he said vocally. "But this is my dream." "Also, let me be part of it," he said, his voice shaking. "We can figure it out. I'll fly to Mumbai. Or you come back on weekends. I doent watch how, but I doent want to lose you." She felt her eyes sting. It was each too important, too unforeseen. They had spent so long in silence, and now the verity had rushed in like a thunderstorm. "I need time," she said. He jounced. "Take all the time you need, but promise me you will end vanish." Mira flew to Mumbai 2 days laterally. The megacity was chaos. Honking buses, neon lights, and people who walked too fast. She set up herself missing quiet hum of the cafe, the way Arif said her name, the way he heeded without interposing. But she didn't call him. She could end. What they had was suspended in another world. One that didn't feel to survive the light of a new megacity, a new job, and late nights with editors. Still, every morning, she set up a cafe. She'd sit by a window, order a cappuccino, and open her journal. But the words came slower now. She realized she had been writing for him each on, back in the design plant. Arif goggled at a computer, without focus. His sketches lost their soul. Structures that formerly felt like poetry now felt concave. One evening, after a long day of nothing, he crossed the road and entered the cafe, their cafe. Her seat was empty. He sat down anyway. He ordered two cappuccinos. The barista smiled but said nothing. He opened his tablet and began to sketch. Her face. Again, 3 weeks passed. Mira entered an envelope in her office correspondence. No return address. Inside was a single distance of paper, a delineation of the cafe table, empty with two coffee mugs. On the reverse was a single judgment. Occasionally silence says further than 1,000 words. She cried for the first time since leaving. That evening, she called him. "I miss you," she said. "I'm still then," he replied. And just like that, the silence broke. They began talking not daily, but frequently. Videotape calls that lasted hours. Voice notes. She'd shoot him prints of bookstores in Mumbai. He'd shoot her filmland of evening light across his office. They erected a ground, slip up by slip up, made of vulnerability and tolerance. 6 months passed. Myra's book was picked up for publication. Arav won a public design award. Life moved presto, but they moved through it together. Also one day, Arav called. "I'm designing a library in Mumbai," he said. "It's a long-term design. I'll be in the megacity for a while." She heaved. "Are you serious?" "Too serious." They laughed, cried, and made plans. On his first day in Mumbai, he asked to meet, not at a new cafe, not her apartment, but at a public theater near the ocean. Mira arrived wearing a pale blue kurti and a nervous smile. He stood under the banyan tree, hands in pockets, face listed toward the ocean. When he turned and saw her, everything stilled. This was different from their cafe meetings. This was real, uncurated, and sun-drenched. They stood face to face, not across glass or distance, but near enough to touch. "You're then," she rumored. "I've always been," he said. He reached out, took her hand, and said, "Let's figure commodity together. Not just structures and books, but life." She didn't answer with words. She stepped forward and rested her head on his casket. And in that quiet, the swells came applause. Arav's temporary apartment in Mumbai was nothing like his impeccably organized plant back in Delhi. Boxes lined the corners half, unpacked. The cabinet work was espoused. But Mira didn't mind. Every weekend, she brought a little piece of comfort into the space. A scented candle, a mound of her favorite books, a factory she named Ivy 2.0. Sluggishly, the place began to act commodity softer, more alive. They erected a meter again, a new bone, shaped by a bigger megacity in fuller days. They met for late feasts after work, explored old bookstores on Sundays, and set up a small corner cafe that reminded them of where it all began. It was exactly the same. The chai was sweeter, the music louder, but it came theirs. "I used to suppose falling in love would be like thunder," Mira said one evening as they watched the rain blur the streetlights. "Loud, insolvable to ignore. But with you, it was like mist creeping in, soft, slow, and far and wide." Arav smiled, pulling her hand into his. "And I allowed love meant giving up your space. But with you, I've made room, and ever I feel more like myself." Their connection, formerly fragile and transitory, had progressed into commodity quiet and sturdy. The kind of love that didn't need constant affirmations, just presence, tolerance, and participated ganders that spoke volumes. But life had its way of testing foundations. Myra's book, 100 Mugs of Coffee, came a surprise bestseller. The publishing house began requesting interviews, appearances, and trip. Arav, meanwhile, was offered a position leading a major architectural establishment in Bangalore. Their timetables began to disaccord. Their weekends grew shorter. Their calls turned into missed dispatches and half-hearted justifications. One Sunday autumn, after yet another canceled regale, they sat in silence on her deck. The tea between them had gone cold. "This isn't working," Mira said vocally, not looking at him. He didn't respond incontinently. The wind rustled the drying clothes on the line. Far out, a tabernacle bell chimed. "I know," he said. She turned to him, eyes glassy. "We said we'd make commodity together. But we're just erecting around each other now." He jounced. "Perhaps we moved too fast. Or perhaps we forgot that indeed love needs conservation." She looked at him, searching his face for wrathfulness, remorse, anything. But all she saw was sadness. And love. Still love. "So what now?" she rumored. Arav leaned back, gaping at the sky. "We take a breath. We figure it out. Like we always do." The coming many weeks were delicate. They didn't break up, but they took space. Mira dove into her book stint, hour of travel between metropolises, managing point visits and deadlines. They still texted, occasionally, a print of a coffee mug, a quotation from a book, a road sign that reminded them of a memory. Also one day, Mira walked past a bookstore in Bandra and saw a new display. In the center was a coffee table book named Face to Face Spaces Between Non-Natives by Arv Malhotra. She blinked, stunned. She walked by, opened it, and her breath caught. The runners were filled with sketches and notes of cafes, benches, window seats, and put away between them were fractions of their story not with names, but feelings. A delineation of her favorite corner table. A scribbled note. She looked up, and I forgot the world. Gashes welled in her eyes. That evening, she showed up at his door, book in hand. "You no way told me," she said. "I was ain't sure you'd want me to," he replied gently. "It's beautiful," she rumored. "You put us in this." I didn't know how additional to hold on to it. She stepped forward, placed a book on his table, and looked him in the eye. "Let's stop running parallel," she said. "Let's make a plan." He exhaled the weight lifting. "Okay." They didn't move by right down. They didn't get engaged, didn't rush anything. Rather, they erected sluggishly, like the library Arv had formerly told her about, with open windows and quiet corners. They decided on two metropolises, half of each month in Mumbai, the other half wherever Arv's systems took him. Mira set up ways to write from anywhere. He erected inflexibility into his designs. They compromised, offered, and occasionally argued, but they always returned to their sense of verity that had brought them together, face to face. A time latterly, they stood in front of a recently opened library Arv had designed in a quiet neighborhood in Mumbai. It had a reading cafe on the side. Mira held a dupe of her alternate book, Stillness in the Noise. He devoted a reading room in her name. They held hands as scholars and compendiums poured in. "You flash back the first time we sat across from each other?" she asked, smiling. "Every day," he replied. They turned to each other. No longer non-natives across a window, but mates across a life. And in that moment, under the soft light of a place they helped shape, everything came full circle. Not a perfect ending, but a real bone. A beginning, face to face.